This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE-FM. I'm your host, Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union with 125,000 members and nearly 50,000 retirees. We're part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available as a podcast on your smartphone. Simply go to the podcast app on your smartphone and search for DC 37 State of the Union. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And always check out our website, www.dc37.net. If you've got any comments about our show, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. We've got a good show this evening. Later in the program, we're going to have New York State AFL-CIO President Mario Salento talking to us by phone from Albany. And in the studio with us now is the DC 37 Director of Community Partnerships, Raul Rodriguez. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you, Chris. Good to be here.
Happy New Year to you.
We're still saying that, yes. Happy New Year.
I'm still saying it because it says my statute of limitations is January.
January's
okay. Over, then we're in.
Then we're good. Okay. Happy still, New Year.
Thank you very much. You're here to talk to us about a series of workshops. Actually, a couple of things you can talk to us about. One is the Office of Community Partnerships, which is a very important, as per the union's mission, of being involved in the communities where our members live and also being part of the fabric of the city. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the office and then talk to us about the programs that you've got coming up.
So, sure. So the Office of Community Partnerships was... It's been a long time dream of DC 37 here in New York City. And through all the hard work of our executive director, Henry Garrido, we managed going on now 3 years to establish the Office of Community Partnerships. So what we do is we take that further step into the community. So our members not just only see us when it's contract negotiation, when it's at the work location, but also see us in the community. We have collaborations with our Labor Faith Community Outreach Program, which will work with the clergy out in the community. We also take positions on supporting different initiatives that are taking place, such as CUNY Rising, the NYCHA Coalition.
CUNY Rising is, what is that?
So CUNY Rising Alliance is a group of labor unions and education activists that look at the different issues that CUNY are facing, whether it's funding, staffing, etc. And we sit down, we put together different ideas, different plans to then present those to our elected officials, to try to see how we can, working together with elected officials, the community, education leader, education advocates, and the unions, how we can move forward our education, higher education.
Well, that certainly makes sense for us because we've got thousands of members who are working at CUNY.
Absolutely.
And our
and also attend CUNY.
And attend CUNY.
And also attend CUNY. So, you know, a lot of our members, they're children. They go to CUNY. They're
absolutely
CUNY students. So it's something that is at the forefront of the Office of Community Partnerships. We also do a lot of events. We just finished doing the Women's Unity Rally at Foley Square, which was a great success. We definitely had a representation of all groups there. And that's just one of
and you can see see our participation on our social media. You can see it up on Facebook and on Instagram and on our website.
Absolutely.
We had a lot of folks out for the march to show solidarity.
For the rally.
The rally.
It was a little confusion there. Yeah. The rally. Well, So those are just some of the things that we do. But internally, the Office of Community Partnerships, the great thing about it is that it's able to collaborate with political action on different things like the rally, right? We're also able to collaborate with the housing department at DC 37, which is the director is Ruth Pena. And what we do there, the collaboration that we do is that at the end of the day, if I'm a firm believer that if you're paying anywhere between $1,500 a month in rent or higher, you should look at buying
ownership,
a property.
Right.
Ownership. The reason being is because either you pay your mortgage or you're paying someone else's mortgage. It's just very simple at the end of the day. And at DC 37, we provide resources to help our members become homeowners. But one thing that we, one challenge that we have, Chris, and this is one thing that we're very passionate in DC 37 about, is student debt. If you're having issues with student debt, with your federal student loans, it doesn't matter how much money you have in the bank. It doesn't matter if your credit score is over 700. The one thing you're not going to do is buy a home.
Because you can't afford to.
Because you can't, well, not only you can't afford to, but if you're having issues like your loan is on deferment or forbearance,
right,
okay, that stops you automatically. And it's one of the things that we are encountering more and more. As we have the housing workshops, more members are coming in that they have issues with student debt. So we refer them to the student debt workshop that we have, which there what we do is we focus on two things. We focus on income-driven repayment plans, which hopefully allows the member to have a lower monthly payment because now they take under consideration their income and their family composition. The second piece that we do is we put members on track to be able to be eligible to apply for public service loan forgiveness. Now, one thing on the public service loan forgiveness, a couple of months ago, there was an article about 34,000 applications were submitted, and only 96 were granted forgiveness.
So basically, you're trying to help members navigate through a system of how do I become a homeowner? How can I afford to become a homeowner? Mm-hmm. And how do I deal with the fact that, you know, advancement takes education, education costs money, and now this weight is on my back. How do I alleviate that weight? And DC 37 is there to help.
Exactly. We have countless examples of members coming into a workshop spending upwards of $1,800 a month in their student loans, not just for themselves, but for their children also, mm-hmm. right? Six, 7 months later, when they've gone through the process, that payment from $1,800 has gone down to $700. $700 still being a chunk of a lot of money,
right.
But it's $1,100 less.
Right. So you do these workshops on student debt. When is the next one? Do we have one coming up?
Yes, absolutely. So the next one is going to be February 20th at the Union Hall, 125th Barclay. And it's very easy to register. You just visit our website, www.dc37.net/student-debt, where you will find a lot of information in regards to student debt and articles and some other resources that are available to us as union members, and also how to register. But
This is January, folks. So you've got time to get to the website. You got time to check it out, and you got time to make it happen.
And find babysitting.
Yes,
yes.
So we're giving you plenty of time. That's February 20th at the Union. Is there a number to call?
So we try to direct everyone to the website
to register.
Just because it makes it a whole lot easier. And a couple other things that we have going on in between January and February. January 30th, we will be having the last part of our financial empowerment workshop, which is something that was put together in collaborations with our Municipal Employee Legal Services, MELS, and the Office of Community Partnerships. So the last session that we have is January 30th, and it's going to cover budgeting and banking. Managing your money, emotional spending. I have to actually attend that class myself because I have an issue with shoes.
You're emotionally spending?
I emotionally spend. Walking here, I'm looking at all the stores. I'm like, this is not a good place for me to be right now. And one particular topic that affects a lot of us, I know that it has affected me personally, is identity theft. You know, now with social media, now with everything that is happening and the access to technology, all these identity theft predators are out there just waiting for a chance, right?
So you're going to tell people how to protect themselves?
Protect themselves against all of these things that are taking place, especially on the internet and in social media. So that is going to be January 30th. That's next Wednesday, January 30th. And to register for that, all you have to do is call 212-815-1502. That is 212-815-1502. All you have to do is give your full name, your local, your agency, your email address.
We're talking with Raul Rodriguez. He is the director of the community of DC 37's Community Partnership Department. And we're talking about a series of financial workshops and student debt and how to get your how to become a homeowner, how to help with legal services. As you know, the union does, you know, we focus very strongly these days on trying to let as many members as possible know about the services we've got to offer. We just got a couple of minutes left. What, anything else in the pipeline in terms of talking to folks in the communities?
Sure. So right now we are we're working on an initiative to help restore a few religious part of the Labor Faith Community Outreach Program in collaborations with Political Action. We're working on putting together a group of volunteers to help restore a few churches in the community. So that will be a volunteer effort with a few other labor unions, Political Action, DC 37, Office of Community Partnerships. So we're working on that project right now. A couple other things that we're doing is, you know, we've always, again, our members usually only see us in pockets in certain areas, right? So they'll see us doing the 40,000 book drive throughout the different boroughs, right? Which has been done in Queens, in the Bronx, in Harlem, etc. They'll also see us at the Harlem Week, and especially by Harlem Hospital with tables with resources and everything that we have to share with the union. So we are always looking to partner with different community organizations. So if our members that are out there, one thing that we find out is that our members are living in the community. They're also members of other groups and other organizations. So if they have something that is great, something that they're very passionate about, just share that with us. And all it takes is a conversation and see how we can partner.
And if you've got an event out there and you're listening to this show, you can also drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net, and we will make sure that the Office of Community Partnerships gets that information. Raul Rodriguez, time flew.
Yes, yes, it does. One last thing. There's a tax workshop also on February 20th that is being hosted by our Municipal Employee Legal Services. So the tax code change, so it's very important for members to come in and get this information as far as the deductions, the assumptions, et cetera, and what to expect by filing their taxes this year.
That's at the union
On February 20th also. Starts at 5 p.m. sharp. To register, call 212-815-1502.
Raul Rodriguez, thank you very much. We'll be back with Mario Salento, the head of the New York State AFL-CIO.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
We're back. This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. And we welcome back New York State AFL-CIO President Mario Cilento. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Chris, thank you for having me.
It's a new year. I'm wishing everyone Happy New Year till the end of January, so you're the last person I get to wish a Happy New Year to on the show.
Well, Happy New Year to you. I was talking to someone yesterday, and we were trying to figure out what is an acceptable cut date, and I've always said by January 31st, so and, I think we made the cut.
And, brother, I'm with that completely. Yes, we have made the cut. Let's talk about the year ahead. This year has not begun well for federal government employees, and you know, we taped this show on Thursday morning. It airs on Sunday night. As of this moment, the President of the United States finally understood how seems to understand how the rules are when it comes to giving speeches, but we haven't yet moved forward to the point where the government is open again for business. What are your thoughts on what's going on?
Well, I think that, you know, the president has sort of a slow learning curve. He's finally maybe figured out that that Congress is a co-equal branch of government, and recognizing that Nancy Pelosi as the speaker is a formidable force and understands how this works and is really out there doing a great job thus far, standing up for working men and women and standing up for this country in a way I think that can make us really proud. You know, it's just, again, Chris, it's outrageous and it's a travesty that President Trump would hold more than 800,000 workers hostage to his whims. And I think we're at a point now where we're seeing this has the opportunity to really slow down the economy. It's going to raise, obviously, unemployment insurance numbers across the country. And maybe that's something that the president will finally take a look at and hopefully see that his misguided approach to shutting down the government is much more harmful, not only to the security of this country, but to the economy of this country. And if that's the case, maybe there'll be some daylight for Speaker Pelosi to come to an agreement with the president. But we'll have to see.
She really has set this up. She took no bull on this at all. And his bombastic style of sort of bullying people by way of social media and then making these, crazy declarations. She really stuck to her guns on this. And I think honor is due. And it's quite an impressive thing to watch.
I think the only thing that the president understands is strength and power. She's not only stood up to him, which people have tried to do in the past, but she stood up to him intelligently and articulately.
Right. Right.
And so now all of a sudden that's a very formidable opponent, right? Not only someone who's willing to stand up to a bully, but to intelligently and articulately go after them and to respond back. So, and you know, I think that's had an effect certainly on his poll numbers. He sees his poll numbers dropping as well. So, again, I think the speaker is lining this up properly. It's just the president has to be willing and, quite honestly, he's got to be able to coherently put together a strategy that gets us to an agreement. I have yet to see the president be able to do something like that, but there's always hope.
Well, let's switch gears to New York State. And Governor Cuomo has proposed a budget. He also set out other priorities for the legislative session, which he presented during his recent State of the State address. There is a different Albany now. It's all one party is in charge of everything. How do you see that as changing the equation for working folks in New York State?
It's really an opportunity, and it's an opportunity to do great things. It's not just here we're going to pass this bill or that bill. This, if done properly, can really shape the future of this state for generations to come, socially, economically, and otherwise. That's the opportunity we have here. It's not just to pass a bill or several bills, but how do we go forward as a state? What do we want to look like 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now? So when you see some of the things that the governor has had put in his budget and some of the response we've gotten from both the state Senate and the Assembly, it's very, very promising. You take a look at, you know, we want to build on what we did last year, Chris, with the Janus decision.
Absolutely.
I know that you're very familiar with that. Henry and DC 37 were a big part of that. But, you know, making sure after building on what we did last year to mitigate some of the damage from the Supreme Court decision, taking a look at this and saying what we really want to be able to do now is build on the governor's executive order from last year, which will protect the personal information of our public sector workers across the state. Because you know very well that some of the right-wing ideological forces that are behind, were behind the Supreme Court decision are now literally knocking on public sector union members' doors. They are calling them. They are emailing them. They are harassing them, hoping upon hope that if they harass them enough, that maybe they'll break away from their union. The fact of the matter is they have not been successful, as you know.
Right.
Membership has been maintained, and in some instances, some unions have seen some growth. Because, you know, members understand what their union does for them. When you see the governor make a commitment, when you see both houses of the legislature making a commitment in this particular instance to keeping personal information, the cell phone numbers, the telephone numbers, the addresses, the email addresses, from being let out to everyone, to the general public, that's a great first step. You take a look at some of the other things we're looking at, the gig economy and the definition of public works. These are issues that set us up well into the future. You know, the gig economy is something where, as you know, we can get anything from our phone now, Chris. We can get a service, we can get a maid service, we can hire a plumber or an electrician to come to our house, some chores. You can have now someone, right, go to the store for you, shop for you, and bring the groceries back to your house.
Right.
All of these things. But you know what? In every one of those instances, the workers performing those tasks are not considered employees. They are considered independent contractors, which is absurd. They are paid by the company. They have, the company's name is on the check. There are work rules they have to follow. As a result, these workers don't receive unemployment insurance or workers' compensation. They're not eligible for the minimum wage or paid family leave or all the things that we've worked on as a movement and as a society to be fair to workers. So what we're saying is, no, you have to consider these workers employees. Once you do that, not only will they be eligible for all those things, they'll have the right to join a union. And this isn't just a private sector or a building trades issue. Believe me, there are a lot of public sector jobs out there that we could see going the way of the gig economy. And as this part of the economy grows and grows over the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years, these workers are not going to have very basic protections, and a lot of states aren't even thinking about this. So the fact that the governor's mentioned it and the governor wants to do something on it is great. Keep in mind also, good employers who treat their workers fairly, who consider them and understand that they're employees, those employers pay workers' compensation premiums. They pay into the unemployment insurance trust fund. So we're actually also hurting good, solid employers who provide health care for their workers. That's what I mean by setting us up for the future. You know, in the 1930s, FDR came up with the Fair Labor Standards Act, and, you know, as we know, instituted the 8-hour day and child labor laws and so on and so forth. This is the time for us to say, here's an opportunity where you have a Democratic Assembly, a Democratic Senate, we have a Democratic governor. How do we set this state up for the future, so that, you know, economically and socially we can feel good about ourselves moving forward? This is the time.
You know, when I was a younger man, I had a number of friends who reveled in their freedom as someone who did not work for an employer. They worked for themselves. They did contract work. And they wound up, as they got older, realizing they were getting screwed royally by lack of benefits, by lack of unemployment insurance. And there's been, I think, over the past few years, an appreciation of what it means to have worker protections. There was a time, I think, when some folks believed that the independence, being independent, was the way to go. And I think that. And I want to ask you about that mindset, about how the perception of seeking worker protections and belonging to a union has changed, and how we need to do that moving forward.
Well, I think we see the fact that we've had several, really dozens of organizing victories in this state and across this country over the past several years. We've seen across the country the approval rating for the labor movement in general over the last 20 years has gone up. I think the numbers are from 48% to now 62% approval rating of the organized labor movement in this country. It's the highest level we've been in terms of support of the general public in over 20-some-odd years. So I think we see that, and I think the general public sees it and understands, look, you know, going it alone doesn't really work. And as you said, you don't get unemployment insurance or the ADA or workers' comp. But think about this. You can get the minimum wage. You can work hours upon hours. There are no real rules to protect these workers. Paid family leave. You don't get very basic. You don't get health care.
Right,
so
right.
You don't have employer-sponsored health because technically they're not the employer. You're not the employee. And so I think people are starting to see it. I think you take a look at some of the victories, the higher-profile victories. You know, just this past week, the teachers out in Los Angeles came up with a huge victory when they walked out and they went on strike for 4 or 5 days. I think, and you've seen this in other states, too, across the country, where teachers and other workers have taken to the streets and shown, look, collectively, we have a voice. And when we join together collectively in an intelligent way, we can level the playing field against the right-wing conservative ideologues who historically have wanted to really diminish our voice or completely eliminate our voice. And I think that all helps us to get to where people are recognizing, as maybe as you were saying 20 or 30 years ago, yeah, maybe I want to go this alone, but, you know, if I go it alone, I not only have no protections, but I'm not going to have a pension. I'm not going to have X, Y, and Z, and how do I take care of myself in my retirement? So I think you're seeing a lot more of this now.
You know what was really cool? What was really cool was the public support for the teachers in L.A. I mean, it wasn't about they said it wasn't about just salary. They said it was about the education of children, and parents really took to their cause. What do you think about?
You know, they talked about class sizes, and every parent. You know, I have three daughters in public school. Every parent is concerned about how many children are in the class and how much time a teacher actually spends being able to, you know, with your child.
Right.
Your child needs help on a particular issue. And I think we see it now. You have a class size of 35 children. How much time a teacher has to spend not only in the classroom, but how much time they have to spend after school or before school starts, getting in touch with parents, grading papers, putting together the lesson plan. And I think, as you said, we really saw that. We saw the general public really come together and say, you know what, this is more than just wages for these teachers. This is about workplace fairness. And I think that's why you've seen the popularity of labor unions grow as it has over these last several years.
Mario Salento, I knew this conversation was going to go quickly, and it's come to an end. Mario Salento is the president of the New York State AFL-CIO, talking about where we are in the state. I appreciate you very much for coming on, my brother, and look forward to working with you in the year ahead.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you for having me. Have a great new year.
All right. That's just about all the time we've got for this show. There is an engineer named Andrea Minocchio. There is a producer named Rudy Orozco. I'm Chris Policano. This is State of the Union. Till next time, ciao.